Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week, my guest's story reminded me that sometimes it's the choices we make in life, or maybe the choices we don't even know that we're making, that create the magic for us, that create miracles for us. And his story alternately had me laughing hysterically and then really deeply thinking and considering that each and every day, every single one of us goes out there and we make choices, whether to go to this store now or maybe in 2 hours, whether to use the bus or drive to work, whether to buy a coffee or a tea at our favorite coffee shop. And really, the magic is inside those choices, because who knows? That selection of tea could have your barista, well, maybe they just learned a really interesting anecdote about that tea and where it came from, and then you strike up a new friendship. And before you know it, you and the barista are going out for lunch or coffee or joining a game night. We never know as we walk throughout our lives what kind of magic and what kind of adventures our choices are going to bring us. And that's what my guest Byron Athene talks about this week, or at least the miracle example he gives. And really, it did. It arrested me and made me reconsider the movements I make every day. Now, Byron is a philosopher, a counseling psychotherapist, a certified mindset coach, hypnotherapist, and author. But also, Byron tells this really powerful story about having a debilitating stutter his entire life and then hiding from interacting with other human beings in a series of office jobs. But then he has this revelation, and I'll let him tell you about it. So now, here's my conversation with Byron Athene.
Because my grandmother's then husband didn't want to ask for directions, they got on the wrong train, they ended up in Yorkshire, which was a completely different place to where they wanted to go. He must have acted like that was the plan the whole time because of his ego or whatever.
How do you self-describe? If you had to go to a party and introduce yourself, or you were at a conference and you had to get up on stage and introduce yourself, how would you do that?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It really is a tough one. So I guess I would describe myself depending on the context or on the environment, I guess. So all right, so I suppose I'll try and just describe myself in a kind of professional manner. So I'm a counseling psychotherapist, a life coach, a clinical supervisor, a trainer, and soon to be author. I'm about to have my first book published, but more importantly, I would describe myself as a philosopher, because when I was 22, 23, I discovered this life-changing philosophical idea, and then that's what made me kind of explore philosophy, because before then I didn't even know what philosophy and psychology were the subject. So when I found this life-changing idea, I just threw myself headlong into it, and so that's how I would just describe myself, I guess.
Amazing. I have very few people who admit to loving philosophy come on the show, so when I saw your profile, I was very intrigued. You know, some philosophies are not for the faint of heart. They take a long time to kind of understand. And, you know, do you actually feel like this might be something you can believe in? So I'm actually very curious, which philosophical way of thought or consideration about the world most speaks to your heart?
So that's a hard question to answer, because I stumbled into philosophy because I found my own ideas. And so I studied philosophy to wonder if, or to find out, or has anyone else thought this? Has anyone else found it? So I would say the ideas that I'm talking about are still quite unique, but amongst the philosophy that I did uncover and research, I guess the type of philosophy I would most align myself with is Stoicism, I guess. Stoicism. But yeah, but I'm saying that, yeah, the caveat is, let's say they say the Stoicists, if you can sort of summarize their underlying principles, let's say they say 10 important things, I probably agree with like maybe 6 of them, which is more than the other philosophies. But I mean, I can remember when I first started my philosophical journey, so, and I started to kind of devour as much philosophy as I could, psychology. I can remember writing a journal, a very kind of unofficial journal, where I try to record or take note of the types of philosophies that I most align with. And I realized that I'm pretty much a mixture of all of them almost. There's a bit of rationalism, there's a bit of empiricism, there's a bit of existentialism and nihilism and stuff. Yes. So I'm a kind of an amalgam plus some of my own ideas, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Is there any hedonism in there?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Hedonism, Epicureanism. Yeah, like I say, most of them, I don't remember hearing any philosophies that I didn't kind of, that I completely disagreed with. They seem to be certain truths or certain aspects of truth in all of them to a certain extent. So I can't remember reading one thinking, oh, that's just absolutely false. So,
or as they say in English, England, rubbish. I watch a lot of detective shows from the UK and they're always saying rubbish. Just rubbish.
I did. That is a word I say fairly often.
Well, now I've already kind of let the cat out of the bag. You grew up in England. Which part of England did you grow up in?
How well do you know England?
I walked the Camino in 2013, and at the end, I spent 3 weeks in Cornwall, kind of going around, you know, in all these Back different west. Places. So kind of just that part.
Okay. So yeah, that's a very nice area called Cornwall. So that's the southwestern tip. So if the UK, it's got like a foot, that's like the toe kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm in South London. So that's like the south part of the UK. And I was born in a place called Peckham, which is quite famous now because of a show called Only Fools and Horses. And do you know the actor John Boyega?
Yes.
Yeah, he's from Peckham as well. So I think a few famous people are from Peckham. Do you like hip hop at all?
A little bit, yes. I'm not like great at it. You know, names, faces, that kind of thing. So
okay, have you heard of a rapper called MF Doom?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. He's also from Peckham.
Amazing. There's like this incredible brain trust in Peckham, I guess, down there. I haven't had, you know, I really just concentrated on spending 3 weeks in Cornwall. I had the option to go to London, but I just thought, you know what? I just walked 500 miles. I kind of just want to relax. And of course, I'm sure, as you know already, the Cornwall coast is so wild and woolly and beautiful. Yeah. And there are all these different towns all over. It's such a huge adventure just to go. 3 weeks was not enough time, but I really, someday, I have a cousin who lives in London. I should go to London. Especially, you know, I'm a fan of history and art. Yeah. And I know you just have some incredible museums there. And so I would be going to the museums. That would be the end of that story. Oh, and bookstores. I would be going for the bookstores. Well,
there are quite a few.
I can imagine. Yes. Yes. Also on the shows, everyone's always eating a curry. And since I grew up in Pakistan, I ate a lot of that when I was a kid. And so I always fantasize about going to England sometime and having a really good curry. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah. Well, where in the US are you?
I'm in New Mexico, Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So down south, southwest, basically, the high desert. So we don't really have a lot of delicious. Santa Fe is really lacking in having delicious food from all over the world, you know? So if you want Thai, we have one Thai restaurant and it's not great. So, I mean, yeah, but that's a whole other story. Well, I'm curious. I'm really actually very intrigued because on your profile, you talk about the stutter that you had when you were a kid. And so how you kind of, you know, it sounds like you hid for a while, you know, you Definitely. Kind of made yourself hide for a while. And so did this childhood experience and kind of the surmounting of it or attempting to surmount it, did that have any effect on how you, you know, the way you've created your philosophical thoughts or your considerations of the world?
For sure. No, for sure. I think, well, chances are I possibly wouldn't be as philosophical if I was more of an extrovert. I think if I was more extrovert, I wouldn't have been so introspective, maybe. And I'm not saying extroverts aren't introspective, but because I was such an introvert, I had a lot of time thinking about my mind, thinking about me. And I think that led to the discovery, and then that sort of like came around and helped me see, well, I should accept me no matter what, almost. So that definitely paved the way for a more kind of wholesome and accepting view. If I didn't have the stutter, I may not have, not in the same way, not at the same time in a way.
Okay, yeah. I have to tell you that when I was a kid, and still somewhat, you know, I like to hide as well. So when I read that on your profile, I was like, ooh, someone who can relate, because I grew up overseas, came back to the States. The culture here was just so confusing to me and I didn't understand it at all. And that combined with my parents' divorce kind of made me just scared of the world. So I was just utterly overwhelmed and I hid for many years in either my room or a book or the library.
Understandably.
And ultimately in eighth grade, you know, the guidance counselor saw me in the junior high school library, which I loved. I loved to read in general. And they kind of banned me from the library because they said, you know, you're basically hiding and you're not developing socially. So guess what? Okay. No more library. You are banned. And so I was forced to go out and talk to people at recess, which was like the worst thing ever. It was horrific. So I'm intrigued by your story because it sounds like you actually hid until you were kind of an adult. What was the, you know, what was the motivating force to make you stop hiding or help you stop hiding?
Yeah, well, oh, okay. Actually, this is a fairly interesting story, maybe. Okay, so I developed a growth mindset before knowing what a growth mindset was, because I learned how to draw so that was like around 2012. So I must have been around 41 or so. And up until that point, or when I was much younger, I tried to draw, but I wasn't able to. I remember art class. I remember being envious of people who seemed to have this natural talent that I tried, and I just couldn't do it. I had three really close friends who were all good artists in their own separate ways. So they had their own style. So that's what prompted me to kind of keep trying every now and again. But maybe I tried like, I don't know, maybe for the 500th time, and I produced the same rubbish. So I thought, no, just stick to writing. I'm much more comfortable with writing. That was my sanctuary, I guess. Like, writing was my sanctuary, especially since I had a stutter, and I definitely didn't have confidence in my verbal proficiency, say, for want of a better phrase. Whereas when I wrote, I could write however I wanted to, as flowery as I wanted to, or as kind of succinct as I wanted to. So yeah, that I kind of resigned myself to the fact that I was never going to be able to draw because it was a talent I didn't have. But then there's a handheld called a Nintendo DS. I had one around about then, and I saw an advert for this application called Art Academy, and it like it pretty much said, learn how to draw in like 5 easy steps. I thought, well, I think that's a pack of lies, but I'll give it a go. I'll give it a go. And within a couple of days, I was already producing, works of art that I didn't think I would ever do. And so I kept on going. I taught myself how to draw. I can share a picture of you if you want. So now I thought, hold on, if I can learn how to draw, I can pretty much learn anything, I think, since I thought drawing was one of the things I assumed I was never going to be able to do. So I unknowingly developed a growth mindset. Then I went on a coaching course put on by my then employer, it was a local authority. So one day coaching course, and it described the like growth mindset to me, growth and fixed mindset. And so I was like, oh yeah, that growth mindset, that's me. So then I was able to sort of own it in a more kind of official way. Then soon after that, one of my colleagues left to become, that I was an admin worker. One of my other admin colleagues left to become a solicitor or a lawyer of some kind. And I didn't even know he was studying, but that made me realize that, that made me realize that I had a general growth mindset, but I had a fixed mindset over a few things, or two things in particular, my career and my speech, because I assumed I'd be working in offices for the rest of my life pretty much. So I thought, well, what career could I do instead? I remembered like 30 years ago, I wanted to become a therapist, but I didn't feel confident being a therapist because I felt too hypocritical with the idea that I could help people with their issues, yet I couldn't help myself with my issue. So that's why I kind of hid in office office work. So then I realized that my stutter, it wasn't the obstacle I perceived it to be. So then I trained. I started a 3-year course. The first year was hypnotherapy. The last 2 years were, well, first year was hypnotherapy, basic counseling skills. The last 2 years was just therapy. Then the last year of that, I also started a coaching course. So I qualified at the same time. So when I qualified as a coach and a therapist. And by then I realized that, yeah, my speech is fine. I mean, my stutter was never really that bad. It wasn't as bad as some stutters I've heard, where people sometimes can't even talk for, I don't know, ages. Like they're stuck on that one word and they're just stuck and stuck. My stutter was slightly different. My stutter was an inability to get started. So rather than mine was more k. So I didn't realize that it's not that bad. Most people don't care. I can be relaxed. It's fine. So that's what made me realize that, yeah, I can be a therapist. I can do a job that involves speaking, not 100% of the time, but it's a fairly integral part of the job. So yeah, that's when I gave myself permission to sort of to be me, to be the me I wanted to be, like, for all those years.
Well, you know, when you're a kid and you have something like that, kids are not really nice to each other. They can be very brutal.
Yeah, they sure can.
Yeah, I'm sure you know that. And it's, you know, it just makes, at least it made me just retreat further into my shell. You know, it was easier for me to retreat versus trying to show up every day pretending like I was okay. I mean, I did have to do some of that in my life, but kids are not nice. And I can't even imagine, having a stutter and just being a child and trying to be in the world. And I think as kids, we learn ways to cope. Obviously my way to cope was to hide in books in the library. You had various ways of coping, but one was to work at the local authority, which I would love for you to explain. What does that mean?
Okay, so look, Friday, I'm trying to work out what the equivalent would be there. It's almost like local government. So like social services type thing, like welfare, I guess, but not just welfare, because I was admin assistant for like children's services. So that's the main job I've had, because I was there for like 23 years, and yeah, it was an okay job in terms of like I wasn't entirely stretched. It wasn't that stressful. It was quite well paid for the kind of level of work. So I thought it was comfortable. So I kind of hid behind the comfort.
Oh yes.
Until I realized that I didn't need to anymore.
I can relate. Well, thank you. It's really beautiful. I think we have a really great idea of who you are. I'm intrigued. Have you ever read Sophie's World?
Sophie's World, yes. Yeah, I've not read it, but I know of it. I read bits of it.
Every few years I reread it, and it's just really good for my heart. So Think about it. Well, the second question I always ask is, did you grow up in a religious household? And if so, how did that change over the years? How did you evolve maybe into your own way of relationship with the world or a deity or whatever you like to call it?
Yeah, I grew up in a partially religious household. Yeah. So yeah, we didn't go to church every single week. We went in phases. I had certain family members who were quite religious. So Seventh-day Adventist. That's my family's religion. It wasn't that sort of bigger part of our lives, but there were phases where we did seem to observe some things more than others, and sometimes more than other times. So it's almost like we were part-time Seventh-day Adventists almost.
Were you all vegetarian? Because I know a lot of...
Oh, God, no.
No.
I'm not saying that to be sort of like to be disrespectful to vegetarians, but no, meat was a very, very common part of our diet. I mean, I was going to say breakfast as well. Well, some breakfast there was meat, but a meal. I grew up thinking a meal wasn't a meal unless there was meat in it.
Okay.
Obviously, I know. Yeah, I think vegetarian, even vegan food has come a long way since then. So there are some really, really enjoyable dishes. But back then, the idea of being a vegetarian, just it wouldn't have. I think to me, it would have felt like something was missing.
Yeah, I have to say one of the things that I haven't had, but which is in every show ever that I watch about England is fish and chips. And, you know, invariably someone's carrying this really greasy either newspaper or like sort of weird parchment paper, and you can see the grease seeping through, and it's just like a giant thing of hot fish, fried hot fish, and then fried chips, and everybody's eating it all the time everywhere. And I'm like, are people just having heart attacks left, right, and center in the UK?
Well, not all the time, but possibly more than other countries in the world. Yeah.
Oh yes, and the other thing, when I was in Cornwall, that I had never heard of before, but I thought, that actually sounds really good. Is a pasty? Did I say
pasty?
That
right? Okay. Yeah, pasty, Cornish pasty.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, it's a, is it like a donut with meat inside, or it's like a.
Oh yeah, how would you describe it? It's like a pie that's shaped in a.
It's like I could. You could hold it in your hand, right? It's like the perfect thing that you could hold in your hand, and maybe not all of them are stuffed with meat. Maybe some are sweet. I'm not sure, but they looked delicious.
You do get some vegetarian pasties as well. It's almost like a tortilla, but it's like a closed tortilla made out of pastry, with stuffings. And most of them do have meat. It would be common to have meat, but there are some, I don't know, like cheese and onion ones, for example, leek and potato and stuff. So
wow, I mean, I'm telling you, when I was in Cornwall, they were like everywhere. I think, I don't know if it's just like a tourist food. or a coastal?
No. It's a staple. It's a staple.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested, you know, with your journey that you've taken, your philosophical journey, do you consider, like, do you think in your worldview or universe view at this point that there is an energy or a god or goddess or whatever you want to call it outside of yourself?
Definitely. I, if I'm allowed to say, I am a regular guest on someone else's podcast. We're going through the alphabet of like psychology and philosophy. So A to Z, we meet the last Thursday of every month. So we're at H. We had H yesterday where we spoke about heaven, and the G we spoke about was God. And so that was quite strange talking about God in an kind of outward way, because I usually don't. In fact, the session yesterday when I spoke about heaven, that was brand new for me, since I haven't described my view of heaven in that way before, ever, to anyone. So except my wife, so she knows. But yeah.
Okay, I just have to tell you that is an insanely brilliant idea for a podcast. I just want to put that out there. It's just really intriguing, and I think would be interesting to so many people.
So it's interesting to use the word goddess, because my, like I said, my view about God is possibly fairly different to most people's views. So I call the creator the source, because I think everything is part of the creator, but I guess to separate the creator from the creation, I call the creator the source. And the source I consider female, because I think the fact that we refer to God as a male sounds a bit weird to me, since males, females give birth, and we're talking about the thing that the agency, the energy that gave birth to the universe. So it I suppose it doesn't really make sense to give to gender God at all. But if you do assign a gender, surely female would be the more appropriate gender to assign, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. The generative force. I'm always thinking, you know, there are so many different places in our lives where we ourselves can be generative, you know, whether it's with our voices helping other people, or like you coming up with ideas or new ways to think about the world that'll be generative, not only for yourself, but for people who read your book or find out something about you. So, you know, in every moment of every day that we live, we have the opportunity to be generative in some way, which is giving life to other people and giving life to the world, giving life to ideas, whatever that looks like. I am not a fan of people who like to destroy and take things apart. And I understand that sometimes when you're, you know, I'm reading this really fierce and funny book right now. It's funny because it's about 30 years old, but it's really harsh. It's by Vine Deloria Jr. and it's called Red Earth, White Lies. And it's his direct rebuttal to, he's indigenous. He is past now. He's brilliant. Was just an insanely brilliant man, but it's his rebuttal to the scientific establishment at the time, especially the white scientists who, you know, have all these ideas about indigenous peoples coming over the Bering Land Bridge, even though they don't have literally any evidence. They haven't dug up any evidence, but it's this story that they've created, and it was orthodoxy at the time. Now that idea has changed, because now they have found, they're saying that the people who peopled North America, you know, might have done the land bridge, but probably came by ocean, you know, a coastal waterway path, which makes way more sense, because it seems less exhausting to me. And there's a ton of food. I mean, there's food everywhere, seaweed, otters, fish. But anyways, this book is a direct, I mean, it's really hilarious, because he is very harsh, rightfully so, to these people who basically look at the indigenous peoples of the Americas and they're like, oh, that old paradigm of you are a savage, do not have any legitimacy. Your stories, even though they're thousands of years old, don't matter because it's all myth. It's all fantasy. Yeah. It's not based in reality. The book is harsh. I mean, when it came out, he was disinvited to things. People were very angry. But it's, you know, reading it now, but also understanding how far we've come scientifically and people inviting new ideas in. But still, it's very topical. We discard the indigenous worldview, the stories that they tell, because we still say, oh, there's no legitimacy. But it was, you know, it's good for me to read those things because I need to understand my place in time. I need to also, I'm an inveterate reader of philosophy, but also other cultures' storytelling. There's their mythos, their way of interpreting the world. And I guess, you know, I really appreciate what you're saying, this generative force, the fact that you're able to see beyond what the dominant paradigm and culture is telling you. Was it an easy journey to get to this place? No.
Yeah, not really. No. It wasn't an easy journey. One of the reasons that it was hard or challenging, as challenging as it was I felt alone for a lot of the time. Since I'm having ideas, it seemed like I was alone in those ideas. So I felt quite kind of, just alone. So it was challenging. And the few times I did try to speak to someone about it, because my idea was fairly different to theirs, I felt almost not rejected, but definitely not validated. So I thought, well, okay, I'm not gonna sort of open myself up to that criticism again. So I thought, well, just keep it to yourself. Just don't say anything. That's fine. That's fine too. What was the name of the book that you were talking about?
It's called Red Earth, White Lies. I saw the title. I found it in this used strange treasure shop bookstore in Salida, Colorado. And I like going into those strange places where there's like weird severed doll heads. There's maybe a vase that's like 70 years old. There's weird jewelry that someone's made over there. And then invariably there's this dusty corner where there are all these books. And I always find treasure. Always, always, always. So I found this and I've read some of his books already. And I thought, I've not even heard of this book. So I just bought it. And I am delighted by it. It's so delighted. It's very exciting for me.
It sounds very interesting. Sorry.
Yeah. No. It is painful and hard to read because the atrocities that white people have visited upon indigenous peoples. I mean, lots of other peoples too, but this is the book we're talking about. I need to learn about that so I know the realities of what's been done. So I'm sort of like educating myself.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah.
So
I should check it out. Yes, yeah. It does sound very interesting.
Good. Well, I want to ask the main question of the podcast, which is, I would love to hear a story. You know, it could be one story. It could be two stories. Everybody has a different idea of what that looks like, of something magical, miraculous, or mysterious that's happened in your life. I have had everything from ghost stories to mothers that were miraculous to someone who died three times and came back and what's on the other side. I mean, and all to say that, you know, whatever story you tell is totally legitimate because we all create meaning in different ways.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the first thing that comes to mind was the moment I realized just how lucky we are to exist as individuals. That was just mind-blowing. In fact, I still can't wrap my head around the fact that it's like nothing had to be here, but then something was created, certain things happened, and the things that happened led to certain people being here. Those people did specific things which led to certain people being born. Those people did certain things that led to other people being born. Fast forward 300,000 years into the future, and we are born. And it's amazing because I think if there was anything different at any part of that chain, we wouldn't have been here. Not as individuals. It would have been someone else. It would have been another sperm and egg combination. So yeah, when I realized that, yeah, that blew my mind. It continues to blow my mind.
How did you even have this thought?
How did I have the thought? Well, I think the first time I had the thought was thinking about something that my grandmother did before my mum was born. And I just kind of, yeah, this crazy story. Crazy story. But okay, right. So I'm of Jamaican descent. So my grandmother and her then husband first came over. This was in the, I think, the 50s, I think, 50s or 60s, maybe 60s, actually. So then, okay, so they came from Jamaica. They planned to settle in one of the bigger cities in the north. I'm not sure why they chose north over south, but north. So I don't know, maybe Manchester or Liverpool, or one of the bigger cities. Because my grandmother's then husband didn't want to ask for directions, they got on the wrong train. They ended up in Yorkshire, which was a completely different place to where they wanted to go. He must have acted like that was the plan the whole time because of his ego or whatever. And so because because they chose Yorkshire, my mum then joined them, and that's how my mum met my dad. So I was like, okay, well, if he wasn't so, I don't know, silly, for want of a better word, I wouldn't have been born. I wouldn't have been born. So then that made me realize that it doesn't even just apply to those bigger life moments. I think that applies to small things as well, like eating a certain food or making a certain move or having a certain thought. If anything was different before the moment of conception, I think it would have been another sperm and egg that met.
Okay, that story is hilarious. It is. You know, now that I was listening to you talk about your miracle moment or your miracle thoughts, and this story really illuminates how you got to that point, because they were not supposed to be in Yorkshire.
Nope, they certainly weren't.
Anyway,
they
certainly weren't. And so because of that, everything shifted and changed, and here you are. And it's like that stroke of luck or stroke of fate that nobody knows how a certain choice is going to change entire worlds.
Exactly.
And that is exactly what happened.
Yeah. 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 So thank God people do have egos. Like, that does, having an ego isn't that bad a thing all the time. It can lead. And I suppose if anything, that led me to a realization that something bad isn't necessarily bad if something really good comes from it. So I did sort of see the world in a sort of like black and white way previously. Like, yeah, if you either did good or either did bad. I then came to realize that you can appreciate everything, because even those bad things could lead to good outcomes. So yeah, that was kind of relaxing. I felt like less on edge to I think before then I always felt the need to want to do the right thing or to want to do the good thing, but now I'm more relaxed. I'm probably doing more good things anyway, but now that I've taken the pressure off, weirdly enough, ironically enough.
Oh, I love irony. I want to tell you that someone told me something in the last couple of years, and I've really tried to orient myself to this, that what we think is bad or negative, and certainly I've had my share, you know, that things happen for us, not to us.
Yeah.
So I think about that all the time, you know, even when I have catastrophic things happen that are just completely inexplicable and frustrating. I try to, you know, I sit in gloom for a while and then I think, okay, something is going to emerge out of this, or some part of my life is going to change. And I'm going to understand later that this happened for me. And it's almost like the ego, you know, I don't have to ask for directions, was exactly what was needed so that we have you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, that's, and I'm like I said, I'm very appreciative of that. It's Yeah, interesting. But do you mind if I ask you for your miracle moment? Have you got one?
Oh,
have
you gosh. Got... You know what? I have so many.
Okay.
I have so many. It's kind of overwhelming. But I'll tell you a story that happened to me that was really quite strange. So I was sitting on the couch one day, I would say 5 or 6 years ago now at this point, and it was morning. And I always go on a walk in the afternoon. Mm. And I was sitting there having my coffee, feeling pretty lazy, and it was around 10. And all of a sudden I felt this urge, you know, go on a walk. And, you know, I talk to myself because sometimes I'm the only one there and I'm like, I'm not going on a walk right now. And a few minutes later, it was like, no, you really need to go on a walk right now. It was this inner presence. It was like, go on the walk. And I was like, and what happens usually is I bicker back and forth with this voice and I swear at them and I'm like, don't tell me what to do. But by the third time it said, go on the effing walk. And I was like, ugh! And so, you know, I'm grumpy. I put my shoes on, I go out the door and I'm really have a bad attitude. And I'm like, okay, jerk, what way do you want me to walk then? If you're going to make me do this, whatever. So it had me walk around the block and then go through this wooded area. And then we came to this crossroads and it basically said, go back to the street. And I was like, are you joking? I've been walking for 10 minutes. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You're making me go back home. And so I go back to the sidewalk and I'm still bad attitude. Mm. I'm kind of a jerk, just to let you know. And so
I'm sure that's not true.
I'm walking and this car pulls up and parks a little bit up the block. And this woman gets out and she's walking all around and she's like clearly confused and clearly lost. She has no idea what she's doing. And I thought, oh, that's odd. And then she gets in the car and she drives a few more, 100 feet. And I'm walking towards her and she gets out again. And I thought, wow, that person's really lost. And then I looked at her car and I thought, oh my gosh, is that a Nissan Sentra? And it suddenly hit me that a woman was coming to pick up a free table that I was giving away. And she said, I'll be driving a Nissan Sentra. And I ran up to her and I said, are you here to pick up a free table? And she said, yes, I'm so lost. I did not write down the address. I took a screenshot of your house from space, but all the houses on the front look the same. I mean, they all look the same. And I'm like, okay, I am... never heard anything so silly. She's like, I drove an hour and a half and I was just so desperate that I would be able to get this table. And I said, okay, I'm the person with the table and you are really, it's way down at the end of the block on the corner. I will jog and meet you there. And I realized that something, I don't know if it was the woman's guardian angel, whatever. I don't even know what happened, but it knew that this woman needed help and that I needed to go out there and meet her, have this encounter. But also I know that it happened because I love science and I'm, even though I have this mystical bent, I'm like, and if I just love science, it knew whatever that energy was that I needed more proof that there are things happening that are beyond our comprehension, that are beyond our understanding. Sure. And it was like, okay, two birds with one stone, help this woman get her free table. You get to glimpse a little bit more of the magic or the mystery of the universe and good luck with that. So yeah, that's my story.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I'm sure she was very grateful.
She was. We were afterwards she sent me an email and it was so funny and banal because I said, I am somehow out here with you and I don't even know how we're doing this. She's like, well, I just have things like this happen. The universe must have wanted me to have this table. And I was like, I guess so. I mean, they were really the spirits or whoever it was, the guard was very serious about you having this table, which I think is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And I would actually pay you to take it out of my hands, but I'm glad you're taking it for free. So that's my story.
That's amazing. Thank you.
everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode, and I hope you found it as delightful and hilarious as I did. I mean, honestly, if they wouldn't have gotten on the wrong train, Byron would not be in the world. And so you've got to look at incidents like that, at encounters like that, at mistakes like that, and kind of wonder, huh, are they really mistakes? Because it seems like Byron wouldn't be able to be on this show unless someone had taken the wrong train oh so long ago. I want to thank Byron for being on the show, and there will be a link to his website as well as to the other podcast he references where he is a guest. Try and check out both when you have a moment to hear a little bit more what Byron has to say about what's going on in this world. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. And you know what would make my heart sing is if you like what you hear, leave a rating or write a little review. You have no idea how much those ratings and reviews help other people find this podcast. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Byron. I mean, I would say have a sense of humor because it's very clear that Byron has a sense of humor. I would say it's be a philosopher, but I think each and every one of us has our own view of life or is trying to suss out how we think this world works, where human beings' places are in this world, all that kind of juicy stuff. But no, I'm going to say be like Byron and listen to your family stories. Dive deeply into your family histories and find out the juicy bits, the good bits, the parts that are funny, the parts where if someone had made a different decision, well, everything else would have changed and life as it is right now would not exist. I think it's beneficial to look back on these twists of fate, these twists of mistakes, and understand that maybe there is so much magic inside those moments, so many miracles that have the opportunity to birth themselves from those mistakes. And then I think you'll go through your life and wonder, maybe after you've made a particularly big mistake, you might be a little more gentle with yourself and wait a while, allow some time to pass so that even you too can witness what kind of magic and what kind of adventure those mistakes and your choices are opening up for you.